It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Jewelry isn't a gift you give just once. It's a way to remind your loved one of a beautiful moment every time they see it. Blue Nile can help you find the gift that says how you feel and says it beautifully, with expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com and experience the convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com to find the perfect jewelry gift for any occasion. BlueNile.com.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Disloyal Idiots podcast. We are here as always joining you, well, you guys can join us, whatever works, to talk about the world of Syracuse athletics. I am Steve Haller. With me as always, Andy Pregler and Christian DeGuzman. How are we doing, guys?
We realize that the reason why Jim Boeheim hasn't made as many Final Fours as he's done over the past, I don't know, decade or so, is because he clearly doesn't have the same dance moves as Jim Larrañaga. So it's just, you got to weigh that out.
This is, I thought that was Larry David.
No, that was Bernie Sanders, actually.
Oh, okay. Trick question. They're all the same person.
They are.
You cannot prove it. They have not been shown in the same room at the same time.
Oh God. Yeah, when Larry and I really, and Boeheim are on the court at the same time, it's just like what's going on?
I mean it's like the
first joke in the first running gag in Last Week Tonight. The Olsen twins are just one person moving very fast in the same spot.
Well, your entire argument also now creates a universe where Jim Boeheim knows what crypto is and is out here shilling crypto left and right. So, you know. Was it NFTs? I forget which one it was.
It also creates a world where Jim Boeheim is carrying hundreds of dollars in cash on the court with him.
And also, that's 100% true.
Also, when the Jim Boeheim is in the Final Four right now, which he is not.
Yeah, the Final Four has been set up in a way that we are somehow the ACC, having its weakest year in the longest period of time, sends a team to the Final Four. And also UConn is winning the title this year. This year is just the worst.
The last 2 years have been like the same thing. Like last year was also considered a weak ACC year. And yet Duke and Carolina made it to the Final Four.
Oh. That one also gave us the beauty of Coach K having to eat it when UNC beat him not once but twice on his retirement tour. Oh baby, that made me really excited. Not gonna lie. Yeah, the Duke hatred is strong.
That's just the UConn hatred, which we'll get into a lot.
Yeah, the seeing Andre Jackson do the celebrating really, really hit me in a way that I didn't expect it to hit, but there we are. Another former man, what if Syracuse had its recruiting shit in line and we were able to just get the best local talent? Huh. Weird.
Yeah.
Everybody yells at football that they need to recruit New York State better, and yet Jim Boeheim didn't recruit New York State well for 10 years. And
what are you talking about? They got Joe Girard.
Not anymore. They don't have Joe Girard.
Hey.
I guess
new that house is,
I was just going to say, that's the new house education right there.
Yeah, the transfer portal news is coming hard. It's coming fast. It's coming all over the place. And we'll start with Joe Girard.
Phrasing?
Joe Girard did, as I believe it was Steve who tweeted this out from the Disloyal Idiots account. Make sure you're following us on Twitter, Disloyal_idiots. Joe Girard did what is known as the Syracuse, declared for the NBA draft, retained his college eligibility, and entered the transfer portal all in one move. Hell of a finisher combo right there. I guess it's really an opener rather than a finishing combo. But Girard has already received interest from several teams. According to Mike Waters, there's multiple visits being set up with Girard. It appears as if LSU, Butler, and one other school that I'm forgetting is the leader
of
the
moment. Adams-Agoria had Stanford also in there as well.
Stanford, there we go. They're all kind of leaders. Like, they're the ones at least that are meeting with Girard first and foremost. I think there's a lot of different topics to have here, but I guess, you know, Christian, what are your initial thoughts? What were your initial thoughts when you heard this? Because I think everybody here had initial thoughts, but I think we all might have had very different initial thoughts.
Nick.
Oh, that was your thought.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, literally, like, okay. Like, and it's weird to say that about your leading scorer, who dropped 16 points and shot over 35% from three. But yeah, at the same time, eh.
I think you're spot on with it, in that it's one of those where if he goes, cool. If he stays, cool. As long as what is being set up to be a decent backcourt at this point isn't, you know, offset by him like being forced into a starting role, if we have better options, I would welcome him back. I don't see that happening, but it's an option. That's the the Jean Bolajac option. Declare, head out for a bit, come back, end up actually playing. But yeah, I mean, what, it's hard to talk about this without talking about some other dominoes that, you know, are hypothetically looking to fall into place.
Yeah. And I think for me, my first feeling was really watching certain media members fall over themselves to praise Joe Girard and what he did at Syracuse, I think really kind of signifies why a lot of people struggled with Girard at Syracuse. I had like a long tweet thread about this that was just like, I remember when he was recruited and he came in, the big story was that dude from Albany picked Syracuse over Duke. And when that is the, you know, headline on your recruitment, there's going to be a level of expectations that you're never really going to be able to meet unless you're a special type of player that can put the team on your back in a way that Joe Girard just never did.
I don't think it was so much that. Yeah, that had some part of it. He was being recruited by other schools to avoid Duke and Michigan, specifically. I think the bigger thing that kind of skewed people's expectations of Girard was the Fredette scoring record.
Yeah, coming out of Glens Falls as well.
Yeah, because nostalgia is a killer drug, and anyone who remembers that BYU run with Fredette probably expected something similar from Girard on a consistent basis, which was just not feasible.
Right, and that's kind of my point, is that Girard was never the guy. He was never going to be the player that Fredette was, in the sense that the latter was I know everyone remembers the shooting, but he was a very good defender and had a physical imposing size that allowed him to do more than just shoot when he was on the court. And that was never going to be Girard's game. I think the other part of it that I think is very realistic with Girard here is that he was basically the canary in the coal mine for the Boeheim exit. Here's a guy that, you know, Jim seemed overly fond of, was being played out of position, did not thrive in the zone, and yet was continually forced into the zone, was somebody who in a system with no real offensive system was just going to chuck it and make poor decisions that were only going to accentuate bad habits already formed. Like pretty much every argument that you wanted to make against Jim Boeheim and about why Boeheim was not a bad coach, Joe Girard was, you know, example number one. And I do think that somebody pointed out to me that Girard is the least successful 4-year starter in Syracuse history. Like to be a 4-year starter under Jim Boeheim, like it's a really hard thing to do. And if you include 3-year starters, guys who started for 3 years and then left to go to the NBA, like the list gets bigger, but the names just get better. And you realize that the fact that Girard was here and playing as many games as he did and starting as many games as he did was really out of necessity and not necessarily out of quality. And I think that, those two things are always going to be kind of conflicting when you think about Joe Girard's time at Syracuse. Was he was very clearly good enough to play at the P5 level in college basketball, but was he good enough to be the starting point guard on a team that had Sweet 16 goals every single season? I think that there's a nuanced conversation to have in there that maybe in a very different team, but especially not the team that Syracuse has been trying to be under Girard's, you know, 4 years here.
Well, I think also the upsetting thing with that also is that in some Syracuse fans, yes, the expectation is Sweet 16. But I think for a lot of casual, just normal Syracuse fans, the expectation is make the NCAA tournament. And to not do that as one of the supposed leaders over the past two seasons is one of the damning things on his profile, especially after last season when he was the de facto leader.
And this is coming off of, I mean, you're within a decade of Brandon Trish graduating, who was the most successful 4-year player in Syracuse history. So within a decade, the program has gone from that to where we're talking about with Girard. And I don't, that statement is nothing to do with Girard. That is strictly to do with the state of where the program sat prior to this coaching change.
And I think that if you were to look at and ask a lot of Syracuse like fans, you know, Brandon Trish or Joe Girard, a lot of people would say Joe Girard, but you look at what Trish did, you look at the numbers that Trish put up and his career in totality. And I think Trish is kind of the perfect example of somebody who became what was needed to enhance a very good team. And Girard, I don't think there's ever been any career development from Girard. Like he pretty much came in the same player that he was when he left, with the exception of being a little bit better in the mid-range than when he came in. Because that those early seasons, he was absolutely atrocious in the mid range, and by the end of this year, he was at least serviceable in the mid range.
The only thing he developed was a post move, and that took 3.5 years to do.
Right, and like it's crazy that they're the one NCAA tournament run that they had was another bullshit Sweet 16 run where they got absolutely destroyed by a more athletic team. Once they finally ran into one, that. I feel like that in itself is just kind of what Syracuse has been. And Girard, again, is kind of the poster boy for this version of Syracuse that fans are really upset about. And I think it's really hard for, like it or not, when you are the starting point guard on the Syracuse basketball team, you're basically the face of the program unless, you know, a Carmelo Anthony or Derek Coleman is also on the roster. Like, I think most people, and Steve, you can kind of correct me here, but at least when I've had conversations with Syracuse fans who have been a basketball fan longer than I have, they kind of define them by the point guards. Like, oh, that was the Scoop Jardine team. That was the Tyler Ennis team. That was the Pearl Washington team. That was the insert whoever you want in there. But for whatever reason, Syracuse's teams and their success or their lack thereof almost always somehow ends up back at the point guard position.
So we only took 12 minutes to get to Steve is old. So we're moving on up. But yeah, I mean, that the eras are kind of defined like that outside of you know, outside of some outliers, like for the most part, yeah, you can almost
honestly kind of break this it down most like recent that. Stretch.
Yeah. So
because what have they actually been defined by? The shooting guards, Tyus Battle, Buddy Boeheim.
Yeah. Yeah, it's basically
Trevor Cooney in a sense as well.
Right, because we had that revolving door of Kadari and like that whole stretch of point guards that never point guarded. But you know, you say the Frank Howard era and people understand where you're talking, for better or for worse. I mean, I always thought more of Frank than most, but yeah, I don't know. It's a weird way to think about Syracuse basketball, because it definitely was for a while. But yeah, I don't know.
Even the team that I came in on, which was the 2011 team, the one that lost to Ohio State in the Elite Eight, like, you know, that was still like the Scoop Jardine team. Like, I remember every conversation that I had with upperclassmen was about like, Scoop Jardine is going to define this team. There was a lot of like weird feelings about Scoop being involved on that team. But it's just like one of these interesting things. And so Joe Girard becoming the starting point guard, I feel like whether you like him as a player, whether you like him as a person or not, like he is kind of the face of the final years of Boeheim from the actual player standpoint. And obviously things did not end well.
We always talk about how my freshman year, 2014, was a god-awful year to enter Syracuse fandom. Do you remember the 2014-15 starting point guard for Syracuse men's basketball? Caleb Joseph.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Because that was the year where Rakeem Christmas was really just the only source of offense on that team.
It was also Chris McCullough, but then he blew out his ACL against Florida State. It was
Chris McCullough for a good 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm. Nets, Brooklyn Nets legend Chris McCullough. Thank you very much.
Yeah, no, that's it. When you think back on 14, that's a rough. That really, we've talked about it before, but that really was rough for you, man.
The football team.
For lacrosse, that was a team that was supposed to win the entire thing and then got destroyed in the Elite Eight by Johns Hopkins.
Mm-hmm. And then wasn't the year after, or was it the year before when they got bounced in the first round?
It might have been the year before, because was that the ACC, the crazy ACC title winner with Donahue at the last second, and then was it Bryant?
Yeah. I think that might have been that, because I remember being like ignoring the first round of the NCAA lacrosse tournament while I was working an internship and just going like, oh, hey, I don't need to care about this game. And then getting the Twitter notification, Syracuse upset, and going, oh, this is bad.
Yeah, well, that's the opposite of me when I was I think I've talked about it before, living out in Boston with Syracuse lacrosse, where I missed the chance to see the greatest game ever played between Syracuse
the Cornell
and
Cornell. One.
In 08. Yeah, yep. I was living in Boston. I could have been at Foxborough. My buddy bailed on me.
No.
And I watched it in my apartment. I was like, okay, we'll probably win, whatever. Kind of had it on in the background, and then it became the greatest
lacrosse game ever played. Like,
okay. So, yeah.
I remember when I got my first ever beat writing assignment for Noons was to be the lacrosse beat writer. And I remember watching that game as a way to learn lacrosse.
He probably forgot everything, and then Christian had to reteach him last year.
And look where it got brought you. Back to you.
Needless to say, that's why John Arcenego covers that now.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it's great. We went from unqualified Newhouse kid to actual lacrosse fans, and I just sit here and talking to a microphone that I don't know how to hold close to my face.
How stark was the difference going from Andy writing Lax to Chris Jasensky, Chris Howard, Jazz, pronounce your last name, and John Arcenego?
Yeah, that's a bit different.
It's a lot. Oh, man. Speaking of, bring us back to college basketball recruiting. My friend Mark Lemaski, shout out to you, Mark, just sent me a tweet from Heat Check College Basketball.
Oh, God.
The, The Final Four doesn't feature a single consensus top 30 recruit, but here are the highest rated prospects and the teams that they are on. Number 37, Donovan Klingon, UConn. Number 47, Samson Johnson, UConn. Number 48, Jordan Hawkins, UConn. Number 50, Andre Jackson, UConn.
Congratulations, San Diego State, FIU, and Miami. You're making your first Final Four. Now be prepared to get crushed.
I know that we're going to have like a Hurley-level conversation, but that man revels in being the bad guy in a way that like the 80s Big East coaches would blush at. And I am really not going to enjoy Red versus Hurley in the recruiting battles that are about to take place over the next few years.
You could have two polar opposite figures.
Yeah, love Red. And again, maybe we finally get to see more of his personality. But for most of what I have heard from people around, Red is a genuinely nice guy. He's and like Boeheim, he's a basketball lifer and a basketball nerd. It's just that he's more of what you would expect from a basketball lifer and a basketball nerd. Just kind of a lot less personality and a lot more just really into basketball.
How much pre-workout does Dan Hurley take before any meeting or press conference?
Yes. Yeah. Now, Andy, at the same time, we're going to Red from James Arthur Boeheim, who I'm not a doctor, but I can't imagine on the recruiting trail was a, you know, stalwart when it came to personality.
Well, it's not necessarily that he didn't have personality. It's just that the personality he had is not necessarily one that you think would connect well with 16 to 18 year olds.
Fair.
But not looking for the nearest Italian steakhouse is not the personality that 16 to 18 year olds really want from the basketball head coach.
Denny's is there too.
Denny's, yeah.
But I just realized, were we ever in on Andre Jackson?
I don't think so.
He's from Amsterdam.
No, this is what I mean, though, is like we give every year somebody, like, Daily Orange.
Time out. Amsterdam, New York, not Amsterdam, Netherlands, where Jesse Edwards is from. Had to specify.
Yes. Sorry. No. I
also notice how the three people here didn't blink an eye when we said Amsterdam, right? Because we knew it was Amsterdam, New York, right? And not Amsterdam, the Netherlands. It's like if we were talking about Liverpool and right. We know it's the Liverpool that's 20 minutes away from campus and not Liverpool.
Not Merseyside, yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. That was actually really great. That it was literally like us just being like, no, we know that this is the borough. Right. This is the small town in upstate New York.
Yeah, my brain went from there to straight to Jesse and like what this roster could look like and all that. And I'm like, wait, Jesse Edwards, Netherlands.
Could you imagine Vili going, if Andre Jackson went to Cuse, like going back to back from Amsterdam to Netherlands, number 14, Jesse Edwards. And from Amsterdam, New York.
Oh, that'd be great.
But like, anyways, going back to my original rant, I was going off of the whole thing about how like everybody looks at somebody every year writes the football article. Hey, they need to recruit New York more to be successful, except there is no talent in New York to build a roster off of as a foundation. Meanwhile, the basketball team, which has a much higher profile, just ignores top 50, top 100 recruits that are literally in the backyard of the campus. And yet that argument never comes up. Andre Jackson's a great example. Isaiah Stewart.
They were in on Isaiah Stewart. It's just that the person who was in on Isaiah Stewart went across the country.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. I know that one's a bit of a loaded one, but there's been
A lot of Rochester talent.
One also is Thomas Bryant.
That was a big one.
Yep. Yep.
Like, well, they were in on Thomas Bryant. It just did not get him.
Right.
Right. And I don't think it's a situation where we're not in on these guys, but I do think that it is something to say where it's like, again, we talk about from a football, we have these football recruiting conversations that if you are a listener of this podcast for any period of time, you've heard us or you've heard our former hosts Dan and John talk about this concept with football recruiting, where Like, you really got to lock down your base, and not locking down your base is an indictment on your program unless you don't have a base, in the case of Syracuse football, where New York is not really a base.
To be fair, it looks like Syracuse basketball was locking down a base. That base just happens to be the DMV.
Yes, and I do think...
Oh, I thought you were going to say that base just happened to be the Fayetteville, New York metro area.
You could not put Fayetteville and New York metro area in the same sentence.
Fair.
The Lower East Side of Fayetteville. Oh, we've gone really off the rails here.
Yep.
This is off-season content at its best. Anyway,
yeah, when lacrosse just cruises to wins all week and it's just all basketball news, here we are.
Yeah. I mean,
well, it's just
to kind of bring it back to the conversation, like, nothing was more damning on this topic than JJ Starling picking Notre Dame over Syracuse. And I get it. Starling spent two prep years in Indiana, not far away from the South Bend campus. That definitely had a part to play in it. But for a guy who grew up in Syracuse to not... And we say Syracuse, grew up in Baldwinsville. It's basically... That's your Syracuse metro area.
Right. But the difference, though, with that is... you know, I interrupted, but you're probably getting there. The indictment wasn't that he went to Notre Dame. It was that as soon as Jim retired, he's here.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Him going to Notre Dame was one thing, but when Red was hired, it was just like, oh, okay, I'll go back to Syracuse.
It was immediate.
Oh, it was within like 3 days or something stupid, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Anyway, I'm going to completely derail this conversation with one more thing that just threw me off. Who was
we've derailed it for the past 30 minutes.
I know. No, when we were talking about Amsterdam, I was trying to remember the other Syracuse basketball player who was from one of those little hamlets between Albany and Westchester. He was the really good scorer who transferred in.
Andrew White?
No.
John Gillen?
Gillen.
I don't know.
No, not Gillen. He was like a wing.
Give me a time.
I think
frame.
He was an
era ballpark.
It was recently, like since after I graduated, but before Gerard came in. And I cannot remember his name.
Was it the guy that was from USF that was here for like 3 days?
No, he was from Pittsburgh.
Oh. No. the guy who was good, like I think he played for two seasons for Syracuse and was like the leading scorer. The name Elijah Moore is in my head.
Not Elijah Hughes.
There you go. Yep.
Yes.
Elijah Moore is the 24 commit.
Yes, exactly.
Where was Chris Hargett from? Maybe.
I actually don't know this. Where was he
from? I believe Elijah.
Oh, Beacon. That's where it is.
He's from Beacon.
Oh, okay.
Yes. See,
again, like, notice how we all know where Beacon is.
This is why he got stuck in my head. I'm like, we had a player from that area who was really good, but another one that we didn't get coming out of high school, another one that we had to wait for a transfer to come to us to get.
Yep.
I digress.
Well, to be fair, Beacon is closer to New York City than it is to Albany.
It is. And it's very funny that I'm actually friends with somebody now who routinely she has a car here in Brooklyn and she routinely in the summer spends it up in Beacon. And
you're allowed to do that.
Yeah, I was going to say
if you live deep enough in Brooklyn, it suddenly becomes a bit more hospitable to like traditional living.
Park a car.
Oh, even from like our for work, I was down near like Atlantic and going from there to up near where you are, it was like, oh, okay, cool.
Yeah, there are houses here now.
Yeah.
Now, what do those houses cost? Do not last.
No, we looked it up. It's impressive.
I like how you use the word impressive instead of something that had a negative connotation on it.
Oh, yeah. There are a lot of zeros.
There's a lot of zeros for fixer-uppers that need to be completely renovated top to bottom just because the insides have rotted out.
Yeah, meanwhile, anyway, if you move to
an HGTV show that's based in New York City.
Right. If you move to that that greater Syracuse metro area, though, you got great prices on housing here.
Well, since I cannot...
Except near where Jim lives?
No, even there. Like, Jim's house compared to... Jim's house would cost less than whatever that small place in Brooklyn was.
That is very true.
I was going to say, if you're like me, though, and you're wasting your money renting in Brooklyn you're never going to buy, and you want to buy something quality that will last a long time, you should buy Home Field Apparel.
Saw that coming from a mile away. Saw that coming from a mile away.
Killing the segues today, folks.
Home Field Apparel is your one-stop shop for the quality vintage apparel of Syracuse, of other things. I've honestly really gotten into their basics. Like, I bought, so because I work in tech and I am a product manager, my wardrobe is like blank t-shirt and dark jeans. And then I went to Home Field and I went, what if I just bought their t-shirts without the mascots, which is kind of sad, but it's the same comfy thing. My work days are significantly better now just wearing those t-shirts. It's like being wrapped in a warm hug every time I want to look at my Zoom screen and tell somebody, the fuck are you saying? Home Field, keeping me employed. Thank you very much, Connor. Your shirts are fantastic.
That is not where I expected that going. Bravo.
You should go check them out. They're doing a ton of things for March Madness. If you're a UConn fan, they have a ton of UConn stuff. Obviously most people listening here probably aren't UConn fans, so go check out their Syracuse things and remember good times like the 1996 Final Four, like Otto, like Vita the Goat. They have it all. Thank you, Home Field, for continuing to be a proud sponsor of our wonderful silly little podcast.
Now, with respect to Home Field, we do have to not hate UConn completely, though, because they were, via internet bullying, the initial people that put logos on the joggers. And now I'm rocking a pair of Syracuse joggers because of No Escalators.
No Escalators does do some good work through cyberbullying. And those joggers, Steve, are... Oh, it's weirdly warm here today, so I didn't wear the joggers when I played soccer. But I did play soccer in those joggers once.
I'm in a basement because I don't live in Brooklyn. So it's cooler down here.
Oh, I miss basements.
Side off tangent, you say joggers and soccer. I can only think about the Aston Villa goalie that was in goal for Ball Schools' screamer back in like 2005. And he had joggers on.
Yep.
Which is just the dumbest looking thing.
Oh, yeah. Always.
we will have plenty of soccer tangents coming up here. Just because that's always going to happen.
Also, I don't get paid enough to do this, but someone should cut up all of Andy's segues in the Home Field ad reads and send it to Connor.
Oh, man.
See? Yeah, I don't get paid enough for that either. I'm the audio guy, and I don't get paid enough for that.
This is your brand recognition. Connor, give us more money.
Connor, make more Syracuse. Make a Syracuse bomber jacket.
Please. Okay.
Let's talk about the Syracuse basketball roster that is at this point almost assuredly not including Joe Girard.
Question mark.
There are two other question marks that are currently outstanding. Jesse Edwards, who Mike Waters is reporting is, quote, 50-50 on coming back or not. As an international from Amsterdam, he is not allowed to get NIL money in the same way that, say, a Judah Mintz, who is currently declaring for the NBA draft and is retaining his college eligibility, will be able to do. There's no other names in the portal besides the aforementioned John Bolajak and Samir Torrance at the moment. It sounds like from the names that are being thrown out that Syracuse are connected to, we're looking at a lot of guards at the moment, which makes sense with Samir leaving, with Girard leaving. You got to bank on Mintz potentially going.
We kind of glossed over that. Like, Mintz declared he was going to the NBA draft.
Yeah,
on Monday.
Yeah, we're gonna get to Mintz in a whole thing.
Wait, hold on. How come during basketball season we don't talk basketball? And now we're in the basketball offseason. All we can talk about is basketball.
Have you not followed our brand of this podcast for the past 3 years?
Point. Yeah. I'll give you that.
I was actually furiously Christian as I was looking at this. I was actually looking for the center. Because before we talk about the guards, I was going to say the one thing that we is like the center conversation is definitely getting interesting. So yes, here it is. You actually posted it from Adam Zagoria. George Mason transfer big man Josh Duro has heard from Florida, Miami, Virginia, Providence, Syracuse, Notre Dame, and Cincinnati per source. Kevin, shout out Kevin for knowing all these things, mentioned that Oduro is a Paul the Sixth alum, and that leads us to talk about the Jesse conversation. Christian, again, as the person who found this, I think that it makes a ton of sense that Syracuse is looking at other big men. Whether Jesse comes back or not, I'm not sure I am comfortable with any of the big men on the roster playing the same role that they played this past season, which was support Jesse when he gets into foul trouble. And if Jesse doesn't come back, I do not trust any of them to do the role of play those minutes. And I would basically be arguing for Syracuse to play small ball for the entire season.
You kind of led into my argument, because I think only one person has done that this past season to show that he can support Jesse. His name is Malik Brown, and he is certainly not as tall as Jesse Edwards. So you would have to almost certainly go to small ball and play Brown at the five. I don't think Kima is at that point yet to make the Edwards Christmas jump that we've seen. He probably needs another year to make that jump, which is what Edwards and Christmas needed.
Yeah.
So
now Malik Brown, if we end up going in that direction and playing small ball, are we looking basically Mark Dolezal 2.0?
Yeah. I kind of said this towards the middle of the year when he was starting to get more minutes. Like he was playing like Dolezal without the passing. And I know Dolezal's passing was one of the things that made him really, really unique as well. But his, if you, again, because we are a pseudo soccer podcast as well, if you kind of think about like how strikers differentiate themselves based on how well they position themselves in the box, that was the same thing that basically was that Brown was doing in the bottom, basically in the post.
Okay.
Where he was just putting himself in the right spots and seemingly just knew where the ball was going to be in order to have the best opportunity to score.
As dumb as it sounds, he was Wondolowski-ing.
Yes, he was Chris Wondolowski.
Yeah.
Yeah. That is an awful comparison, but yeah. Like, an awful comparison, like, do I really want to compare someone to Chris Wondolowski?
Hey, in MLS, he was a phenomenal striker and always in the right place at the right time.
Yeah.
Or Giassi Zardes, except he couldn't finish. Or still can't finish, but...
Sorry.
Zardes is always in the right spot. Just, you know, it might be his head that... actually, have you seen this week's episode of Ted Lasso?
Yes.
Giassi Zardes is the Danny Rojas goal.
Oh, yes, it is.
Okay, I'll let you guys talk about Ted Lasso first, and then I'll go back to my Malik Brown comparison.
I was mostly going to say that I think one of my favorite points, I'm not without spoiling this week's newest episode of Ted Lasso, is that there is a certain player that is definitely referenced, but not obviously called out by name. Otherwise, he would be suing Ted Lasso like crazy. One of my friends is one of the first Google results when you search that said player from an interview that he did with said player.
Oh, that's great.
And it's just been very funny to me. Like, wait, who is this guy supposed to be? They do the Googling. And it's like, oh, here's my friend's photo of him because he's just interviewing this guy. Mm-hmm. Anyways, it is see, I said we were going to do a soccer tangent,
hey,
and it wasn't even what I intended to do.
So
stay tuned for more.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because I'm going to continue it. This is a slight throwback. If I had to compare Malik Brown to a soccer player, he's Dimitar Berbatov.
Oh,
because
yep, I like that. Without the cigarette smoking and stuff.
Well, yeah, without the work weight problems.
Right.
Because Berba was very good at knowing where to be at the exact right time.
Mm-hmm. And absolutely.
So that's Malik Brown.
The fox in the box.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So
honestly, like I don't hate the idea of Syracuse going and playing these players and playing small. I think that we've seen that there are certain situations where playing a traditional lineup doesn't necessarily work in today's college basketball. Now, rebounding definitely was an issue for Syracuse playing with Jesse Edwards in the middle, and I can only imagine that it would get worse without Jesse. But I'm, you know, we've talked about how much of that is up to the zone, and if Red doesn't play zone, does the team's overall rebounding improve? I'm not sure. These are big unknowns, but I do think that there is a potential here for the small ball lineup to be more beneficial than trying to force somebody who's not ready at the five to play significant minutes in a game just to round out the lineup.
Well, the other thing that does similar to what you're talking about, if they're not playing zone, Munir Hema is going to need a lot more work.
Yeah.
Like, I don't see him playing, you know, away from the basket defense all that readily at this level. That said, I'm still having trouble shifting my brain out of zone personnel, because that's all we've known for, you know, even when we weren't solely playing zone, we still recruited for the zone. So it was still a thing. But
what's Bill Raftery going to do now when he has to tell people what defense Syracuse is playing at the beginning of games?
Maybe that they used to play a zone with man-to-man principles. This is Syracuse, who formerly played.
Well, another player who used to play in that zone is Judah Mintz. As Christian mentioned, this is now where we have the real big conversation about next year's roster. Judah Mintz declared that he is entering the NBA draft process, but will retain his college eligibility. This means that he is not hiring an agent. It means that he will participate, if invited, into a select number of pre-draft workouts and combine activities, what have you not. I think we all knew this was probably in the cards. It's just a matter of if what he's going to get back is going to convince him that coming back for a year will improve his stock dramatically from where it is now. And I think that what he'll hear is that his shooting needs to improve and that his defense needs to improve. Now, if we're not playing zone next year, the defensive concerns could definitively be alleviated by coming back for a year. The shooting, less sure about, but it does feel like Judah is in because of the coaching change. I personally feel there's a higher likelihood that he comes back, if only because he will definitively get to work on the defense in game situations, as opposed to having to learn it on the fly in summer league or in the G League and getting exposed for a good 6 months.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing is with the second round money, if because right now he's pretty much exclusively projected second round. Unless he's in the first round now with NIL, there's a chance that if he's not guaranteed or told he's going to be a first round pick, that Weitzman just backs the Brinks truck up. And if you're making more coming back to college than you would have on a two-way deal, do you do that?
How jarring would it be to see a Brinks truck in South Campus?
Yeah, that isn't going to the incomplete.
Yeah.
That is, oh, man, I missed the incomplete.
The last time I was in that place, I literally ran into Orenze Onowaku. That's how long ago. Again, Steve is old.
Wow. Love that, though.
Like,
love
physically ran into him and Dante.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, okay, cool. You're huge.
He's a large human.
Yeah, I'm not a small human. He made me look tiny.
Orenze is just large human all the way around. Mm-hmm. Christian, I think the biggest question here is that if Mintz comes back, we are relatively sure that he and JJ Starling are going to play really well together. Like, their games seem to complement each other. Now, the bigger question becomes
the Venn diagram, like, of those two is pretty circle-y.
Yeah.
Well, so this is the part that I think gets really interesting here. there are, I'm not, we won't spread the rumors, but there are rumors that Syracuse might be going after somebody who would be an established point guard and push one of Mintz or Starling to the bench. And I don't think that that's a bad idea, especially in the case of Starling, who really struggled at Notre Dame. Like, I will not tell you how bad his defensive BPM metrics are, because they make Joe Girard look like a competent defender. There's some concerns there. Now, with the bigger, I think the bigger question is, if Mintz isn't coming back and Girard isn't coming back, you got to hit that portal for some scoring, don't you? Because I do not see anybody on this roster in a position ready to handle not just the output, but the defensive focus that would come as being the only guy on the roster who could potentially put the ball in the basket.
Here's the problem. I actually think that Chris Bell or Justin Taylor could handle the scoring output. I generally do believe that. The second point, though, the defensive, that's where it becomes tricky. And that's basically been the narrative of Syracuse for the past 2.5-3 seasons. It's not something that we need to beat into the bush any much too much more. It's who steps up defensively. Because basically, that's how Syracuse has won its games the past couple of years. It's been through offensive showdowns. And that's how they won their games last year. So I Bell and Taylor have the offensive capabilities. It's, can they develop enough defensively to support that and prove that they have minutes, that they earn minutes on the floor?
Yeah, that's going to be the crux. I mean, depending on what comes into the guard room, either of them can shift over as well, like we've been talking about. That said,
if even someone comes into the forward room.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because think about it. Syracuse has three guards right now who are playing forwards. That's Bell, Taylor, and Copeland.
Mm-hmm.
Copeland played point guard for a ton of his time at ING.
But weirdly looks the most comfortable at small forward, too. Compared to any of those, them?
I was going to say, for those who are listening, podcast or visual medium here.
That was everybody with a relatively confused face.
Yeah, just a lot of shrugging for me and Andy.
Yeah. Like, well,
I think it's really obvious that this roster is massively incomplete at this point. And I think that what we're hearing, what we're seeing reported, what we're hearing rumored is that Red understands this and is attempting to do his best to transform a roster on the fly. And I'm intrigued to see what happens. I just worry, and I think it's very valid, that Syracuse could end up with much of the same, where we got a bunch of guys that don't fit well together, and next year is going to be a big mess of trying to figure out how that works. But we'll see. There's definitely a lot of decisions and dominoes left to fall before we can even have a realistic conversation of what the roster looks like. But a team that has had a lot of roster changes that we just found out about was the Syracuse football team. Spring football practice has begun. Let's start with the most obvious thing. The roster looks a lot different in ways that we didn't expect. The roster did not include Jacobian Morgan, who we saw play in that cursed season where every quarterback in the room got to play a game. But it seems like Jacobian Morgan is out of the roster. Neil Nunn and Rob Hanna are not on the roster. Anthony Redd and Garth Barclay from the offensive line are no longer on the roster. It seems as if, and again, I'm putting seems, there's some interest of Syracuse on hitting the portal to add depth in ways that I didn't necessarily think Dino was going to do, which makes me pleasantly surprised and hopeful that that wouldn't happen unless they were pretty confident that they're going to get some bodies in there. Morgan is somebody who I think probably can have success somewhere in the MAC or at a smaller school. I liked what I saw from him when he played, but I like a lot more of what every other quarterback in the room has. And Neil Nunn and Rob Hahn are guys that played really hard and really well, but man, they were so small.
This so is small. Where we're going to have Steve talk about the offensive line for the rest of this podcast, because from what we were shown in spring training, I said spring training, I'm in a baseball.
Yeah. We'll give it away.
Says the man in the Yankee shirt.
side note, this was my last Yankee shirt, which was the last time I impulse bought a Yankee jersey for a hot prospect. And that was Greg Bird. And so I will be doing that again for Anthony Volpe. And I hope that doesn't follow the same track of a good first year and then just nothing.
Yeah,
about Bird that. Was not the word.
I was so sad when he didn't turn out to have a consistent career. But getting back to Syracuse talk, what we saw from spring practice is that the offensive line is, yeah.
Well, 2/5 of it.
Yeah.
One other, prior to going into line talk and getting derailed, one other stupidity that I saw from the roster. There are 8 tight ends on the roster. 8. The number after 7 before 9.
What is the let's set a generous over under at 50.5. What is the number of receptions that a tight end receives this year? And that that does not include Ronde Gadsden.
He is one of those listed at tight end.
No, oh my
as
God.
Is Stephen Mahar, as is Dan Villari. So yeah.
Dan Villari's listed at tight end. Congratulations yes. to him.
Also converted defensive lineman Pat Alberga, Josh Kubala, Max Mang, David Clement, and Carter Clark.
See, on the one hand, I think Syracuse might be zigging where others are zagging, and they're trying to do the Philadelphia Eagles thing of you all want to spread out. And you got lighter and faster. We're just going to shove a bunch of big guys and run it up the A or B gaps and make you deal with that. Don't hate it. Don't hate that concept. The other thing is that Dino Babers is now.
But also Syracuse doesn't have Kyle Juszczyk and George Kittle.
I was going to say the more likely scenario is that Dino Babers thinks he's playing 4-dimensional chess by convincing teams that by looking at his roster that he's trying to get teams to play for like tight end based sets when in reality all these guys are basically just really big slot receivers.
Yep.
Juszczyk and George Kittle.
Yeah. Exactly. So anyways, those are my two thoughts on there. Steve, go back to talking about why this roster makes zero sense and why I'm already like both frustrated and yet weirdly intrigued.
I'm frustrated at the amount of volume leveling I'm going to have to do in this post. However, the roster as constructed consists of 10 offensive linemen, some of which have seen time, some of which have not. One was a fullback last year. Including some of the footage we had seen of Wes Ho getting reps at right guard, and it didn't look great. I believe some of the footage that Mike Ostrowski got us from practice showed Ho and Mark Petrie working at the right guard and tackle. I don't have words. It wasn't optimal, let's put it that way. It was tough to discern who that starting right side will be. I will assume eventually it will be Chris Bleich. However, he was a scratch in the footage that we saw. So, that's who he's going to work with. I don't know at tackle. We saw some of Joe Moore, the Richmond transfer. He looked okay. And this is against the defensive line that is not particularly supposed to be one of our strengths. So I'm curious how this is going to look. Aloha didn't look horrible at center. The right side with Ellis and Enrique Cruz looked fine. It was mostly the open door that was the right side of the line that was that stood out to me as an issue looking through the footage that we saw. I don't know if you saw anything else from those, Christian.
No, it's just we're back to the same problem of revolving door.
Right.
At offensive line, which
meet the new boss, same as the old boss.
Yeah, it's like it's so sad because like for the first time, like for the first time in quite a while, Syracuse is going into expectations at skill positions,
mm-hmm.
which is like it was probably the first time since the 2018-19 season.
Yeah,
that's happened, and
that didn't work out well either.
Because and what was the main reason? The revolving door at offensive line.
Yeah, weird. Funny how that happens. So, yeah, we do have the returning, a good chunk of the returning linebacking core. Everyone that was expected to return with Wax, Thompson, Sparrow, Mason, McDonald, Lowry, Sagano, Dolan, Austin Roone, and Caden Bailey, who I'd assume we're going to see more reps from this year after his very solid showing in the bowl game.
That, once again, is going to be the strength of the defense.
Yeah.
The linebackers are going to be incredible.
With Okechukwu back, that D-line does look better than it could have as far as depth-wise. So that's definitely a help.
It'll depend if hopefully Hawkes, stays healthy.
Right.
And if Knowlton makes a jump.
Gears up to 233. Hawkes is at 240. Lockett's at 270. Jobody's up to 247. Knowlton's at 252. So they're starting to put on some weight, which is nice. Still not where we'd want them, but better than when they came in, which I guess is all we can.
When Lockett is your nose tackle at 270,
right?
We're going to be seeing those weight discrepancy graphics on ESPN again.
Mm-hmm. Well, Kevin Darton's 266, but he's also 5'11", so at least he's got the bowling ball factor. Like, he's dense, so he will be tough to move. As someone who's played against those guys, he will be tough to dig out. But, yeah, it's not great. We literally do not have anyone on the defensive line over the three Bills mark. Or over the 280 mark for that. But nope, Braylon Ingram. Braylon Ingram is 297. Pretty sure he's our nose.
Forgot about him because for some reason the transfers are not being made available during media sessions.
Oh yeah, none of the new guys are, right?
Yeah,
about that. That'd be nice.
That's a shame.
Yeah, because at DB you've got Jaden Gould and what's his face, the other guy that came in.
Jaden Bellamy.
Yep, Jaden Bellamy.
Mm-hmm.
That would have been nice to talk to. Alas, now we have a dog on the pod.
Yeah, my dog just wanted to come say hi. And now she's jumping up and going to go sleep on the pillows behind me. She likes the orange and blue ones. Who knew? I trained her well.
Good job. Good work.
Andy read How to Grow an Orange, written by Sean Keeley. Okay. Available now on Amazon.
I did. That was actually the first ever, that was actually the first ever Syracuse book I read. So just wanted to, yeah. Anyways, the one thing I keep thinking of, and Steve will remember this because I think we talked about this, in the pre-Christian days of the pod, when the SU decided to do that series of interviews with the coordinators, and is Starling Gilbert, former offensive coordinator, basically said during that interview that spring ball was less about defining starters and more about figuring out where certain players could find a role that they didn't have a role previously, or figuring out which players were willing to compete in the ways that the team and the coaching staff wanted them to compete. So when I see things like this weirdness on the offensive line, or the 8 to 10 tight ends that they've got in the room, like, to me, it's definitely worrisome because it means that the staff is not happy with what they have there currently. But it also does kind of open me to this idea of like, okay, maybe what we're seeing is not the long term plan. This is just a temporary, we get a window to, as a great internet meme goes, like, you got to fuck around to find out. And that is what they are attempting to do. Does it inspire me with confidence? Absolutely not. But I do think this is part of the process and part of the reality of being at a school like Syracuse.
Look at you, almost sounding like you were in spring camp. You're right. It's like what they tell you about college, where it's not what you learn, it's learning to learn. And spring ball is kind of like that, where you're teaching the young kids, you're getting people more up to speed. Yes, you're hitting the weight room more, you're getting more scheme installed, you're doing all sorts of stuff. But the bulk is you seeing what everyone has to offer, not necessarily putting them in order, but knowing what you need to work on between now and the season. We will learn more when neither of you guys, but Mike, myself, Dom, and Kevin will all be up at the spring game. So we'll have plenty of eyes on the actual action. I can't remember if they're televising this or not because it's Syracuse and who the hell knows because, well, it's done.
Well, I think there is somewhere in the ACC network like TV contract that is all spring games are televised.
Ooh, so you guys did get to see it.
I think.
Nice. So that'll help.
Because it was televised last year.
Okay. If it was up to Dino, it probably wouldn't be. But.
Yep.
But yeah, we'll learn more about what the depth chart looks like and how these guys are performing at game speed during that. But this is still, you know, you're still fleshing stuff out, but I am still worried as Christian is about what the hell happened in that footage we saw at the line.
It's not what you want, to quote a great Yankees manager. It's just not what you want.
The one thing I would want is us to in March or May. Is it May when the portal opens again?
It's gonna be May. Yeah.
Oh wow! Bravo. It was good enough. It forced a plosive into the speaker. when the portal opens, to be able to adapt what we're looking for into who's available and see if we can bring home a couple of new bodies that fit some of the needs, because some people will leave after the spring game or after spring ball too. So what we see on this roster will not be the roster construction after May. Hopefully we'll see more in than out, but who knows?
And unlike in previous years, there haven't been, and I don't think, maybe less than, there's maybe been less than three early high school enrollees this year as well. Whereas in previous seasons, there's been quite a few, at least eight or something like that. I'm kind of making these numbers up off the top of my head, but it feels like that there are a lot less high school enrollees. So
yeah, we did get a lot of the transfers in, except for the two other offensive line transfers, I think. Maybe one other.
Maybe I completely forget, but like, you don't have a lot of those guys who are, you know, coming to campus early to get that like spring ball advantage that Dino loves to talk about.
So it was Clement that we mentioned at tight end, Ike Daniels at running back, Muafak Parkman at running back, Jaleel Smith at D line, David Omaparoila at D line, and then the transfers. So Moore, Jaden Bellamy, Jaden Gold, Brady Young.
Four or five, which is more than three, but like still not as many as we've seen from earlier years.
Of the 20 that signed, I mean, it was those five plus one, two, three, four, five transfers as well. But you know, you'd like to see more of the kids getting into.
Yeah, even though this class wasn't that high profile, you still want them on campus.
Mm-hmm. No matter what, that's better than not having them on campus. So.
Well, as we are somehow yet again almost at the mark of completing another podcast, I feel remiss to not mention that the women's lacrosse program is the number one lacrosse team in the nation. That's lacrosse this week. Well, I was going to say, I saw the Louisville score line and saw that it was, oh my, in like the first half. So good for you guys. Just keep kicking ass. just keep kicking ass.
Yeah, I mean, you get that and you get the Cross Simmons Trophy retaining or remaining in Syracuse. And that's our week in lacrosse.
Yeah. Sweet. Neat. Good things happening. We'll talk more about it next week, I'm sure.
Before we run away from that, Christian, is there anything we actually need to talk about for lacrosse?
Joey Spolina's really good at shooting behind the back.
Oh, that was beautiful. That was a thing of utter beauty. Yeah.
He did it twice.
Oh, I only saw
Knew that having top recruits was a good thing.
Right. It comes in handy, apparently.
He did it twice. So. They were both identical to his Maryland goal.
Okay. I was going to say, I didn't know if he tried something new. It was just, he's really good at doing the same thing.
He's really good at doing that.
Yeah. That's got to be so hard to defend.
That's why he should dodge more. Okay, I'm done.
Oh, God. Yeah, as we get closer towards maybe we should schedule it up for before the start of the stupid stretch for both teams. Getting John on here to do a quick lacrosse segment, too.
That'd be good, yeah.
Probably wouldn't be the worst thing in the world.
I'd be interested to see if actually John agrees with me that Spolina should dodge more.
John, if you're listening, reach out to Christian. You're in the same Slack channel.
That is accurate. Gentlemen, we are at the end of our show. I think this went relatively well as usual. Thank you to everybody who joined us on Disloyal Idiots, a Fans First Nation podcast. We really appreciate the support. Make sure you like and subscribe on whatever podcast platform you're listening to. Yes, Steve.
Oh, no, I was just like, oh, I forgot to mention that.
Yes. Yeah. Fans First Network, our newest thing. They are. What was I going to say? I had one more thing about that. Oh, yes. Make sure you like and subscribe. You know, help us trick the algorithm into spreading the Ottoman Empire across the internet. Again, if you're watching this on News Magician, thank you so much. We really do appreciate the support over there and our continued support with the News Magician crew. And we want to make sure that you have liked and subscribed, just because as we kind of noticed on the Spotify podcast or Spotify portion of this, all of our names and stuff have switched over. This is where you need to go for all of our great content moving forward. So definitely just keep hitting us up. The Fans First network is going to be doing a lot of cool things. We're really excited to be partnered with them, and I think it's going to be a great time. So for Steve, for Christian, for myself, for my dog, go Orange.
Go Orange.